we'll be discussing how to see Krishna everywhere. This is a very important point because we think perhaps we are seeing things as they are. And a first lesson in humility. Is it a little warm in here? First lesson in humility is that there's a good chance for not seeing things as they are. There's a good chance that our vision is inadequate, it's faulty, and although we're making decisions based on our dearly beloved vision, we can be led astray many times. Somehow or other, though, we have great confidence in our vision. I know what I'm seeing. I'm seeing it the way it is. And this is a great detriment in spiritual life when we cannot take into account that perhaps I'm not seeing things the way things are. Perhaps my vision is inadequate. You know, the material atmosphere gives you this false sense of confidence that you know what you're seeing. After all, you've read so many newspapers, you've watched television, you can trust your vision. You know what's going on. Of course, in materialistic society, really no one knows what's going on. They don't know what's going on in terms of political and economic arrangement, and therefore people easily become exploited by higher powers because people think they know everything, and meanwhile, they're being cheated. So, in order to go on as a devotee, it's always necessary to have real humility. And real humility doesn't simply mean, you know, you fold your palm, put your palms, your hands together like that, and bow your head. Real humility entails more than physical gestures. Real humility entails understanding that my vision is weak, my vision is limited, and my vision is subject to mistakes. So this is a very important point because we all are making decisions every day, both long range and short range, and we get this false sense of confidence that I know what I'm seeing. I'm seeing things the way they are. But a careful study of Bhagavad Gita will show you that there's so much that we don't see. And Krishna in Bhagavad Gita will teach you how to see. But in order to see, there must be qualification. For example, in the 11th chapter, Arjuna wanted to see Krishna's universal form. And Krishna said, it's not possible with ordinary eyes. I must give you special vision. Of course, Arjuna was humble. He said, Krishna, it's possible. Somehow the range that I can see your form as the all-pervading universe. And Krishna said, okay, but I must give you special vision so you can see that. So this is teaching us a great lesson that there's so much that we don't see that we need divine help in order to notice. Even in our own little lives, we don't see ourselves clearly. We don't see our family clearly. We don't see what's going on in this world clearly. So, those of you who have Bhagavad Gita can turn to text 29, chapter 6. Sarvabhuta samatmanam sarvabhutani chatmani. Ikshate yoga yukta atma sarvata samadarshana. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized man sees me everywhere. So that should make us curious. How am I going to see Krishna in all beings? And how will I see every being in Krishna? Am I seeing like that? Maybe a few times I'm seeing like that, but most of the day I'm not. When you start thinking about these kind of points, you realize that Krishna consciousness is not simply a theoretical affair. It's not simply just some religious belief. is actually the art, science, and culture of how to see the ultimate reality. Now, sometimes devotees, those trying to be devotees, they say after some time that, oh, I've been chanting, I've been doing service, I've been doing this and that, but I don't notice any difference. This is generally due to lack of proper guidance. Even in our chanting of Hare Krishna and performing devotional service, we do need guidance. How to see Krishna in everything. Krishna himself said in Bhagavad Gita, if you want to know the truth about all the things I'm explaining, then you need the help of a bona fide spiritual guide. So, if we want to get beyond the theoretical platform, beyond catechism religion, beyond just having some beliefs sitting on top of our brain, oh, I believe this, you believe that, then we need help to assimilate Bhagavad Gita. And there must be a desire, first of all. Krishna says, this is the way a real person sees. I want to see like that. And obviously this means I'm not seeing properly. This is all involved, this is basically what we're talking about is humility. But this is a very scientific, full understanding of humility. Otherwise, as I said before, so many of us think that humility is simply you keep your head down, your shoulders hunched over. Real humility is based on understanding I don't see reality. I need help. Just like the mantra, Om Jnana Chimanandasya, Jnananjana Shlokaya, Chakshra Umulitamina, Tajmai Shri Gurudeva. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My eyes were tightly forced, closed. I was keeping them closed. And my spiritual master kindly opened them with the torchlight of knowledge. To accept that one is blind, even though you think you see, that's real humility, isn't it? To accept that you're blind, although you think you see. That takes quite some surrender. But that is what's required to advance in Krishna consciousness, humility and surrender. That someone can see better than me. I'm just seeing a small fraction of the situation. Or I'm not even seeing anything of the real situation. This is what makes for the happiness of new devotees. They've been burned in the material world and they take the Krishna consciousness with great enthusiasm, like someone diving into the estuary on a hot day. They're just refreshed, splashing about. They know it's been hot out there and now I'm in the cooling water. But sometimes as the years go by, we lose that initial enthusiasm. Why is that? Because we've lost our humility. In the beginning, we can accept, yeah, I don't really know what I'm doing. Otherwise, why was I suffering for so long? Why was I performing so many foolish activities? But as the years go by, we lose that humility. Yeah, I know what I'm doing. I know exactly what's going on. I can analyze everything. I know what's the problem with all the other devotees. I can tell you what each devotee's fault is. I can tell you what's wrong with the management. I can tell you what's wrong with this, that. No problem. In this way, because we've lost that initial humility, we get very proud in our vision. To be proud doesn't simply mean to stick your nose up in the air. It means to think, I'm seeing it exactly as it is. No one can tell me any different. Or, 99% I'm seeing it as it is. I'll take a little correction, 1%, but 99%. I'm sure those of you who have been in business, if you've ever had workers like that, no, it's impossible. You've had workers like that sometimes? It's like, see, what can you do? You can't teach them, you can't train them any differently. They end up screwing everything up because they're so sure they know what's going on. So we have to be wary of this attitude in spiritual life. What is real humility? Every morning in the temple, we're reciting Lord Chaitanya's eight prayers. Shikshastaka, Trinada, Peace, Nishi, Swarasa, Amani, Namani, Dina, Tirtha, those prayers say one should be devoid of all sense of false prestige, yet ready to offer all respects to others. If you think that you're seeing things exactly the way they are, you won't be able to do that. And in fact, it'll lead to many problems, because you know you're seeing things rightly, and people are not accepting that. So it takes great humility to admit that there's so much going on beyond what I can see. Now, from the material point of view, materialists, they're so proud that they have a difficult time accepting things like UFOs or other material phenomena. Of course, for a devotee, these things are just insignificant. But as devotees, we have much more to be concerned with that's beyond the range of our immediate sense perception. We have to be concerned with our own material desires that grow like weeds. We have to be concerned with Krishna's desire. Am I actually seeing what Krishna wants? So Bhagavad Gita is trying to give you a glimpse of or an idea of how a true yogi sees. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized man sees me everywhere. Now, if you're actually seeing Krishna in all beings and every being in Krishna, then you know living entities are not meant for my own sense gratification. That means more than being a vegetarian, I don't kill to eat because I know that every creature is part and parcel of Krishna. But vegetarianism is just the beginning. If we actually know that Krishna is in everyone and we're seeing Krishna in all beings, then we don't want to use anybody for our sense gratification, whether it's an animal or our own family. We don't want to use our wife, husband, friends, children for our own sense gratification. It's a very important point. That means we are seeing Krishna in all beings and seeing every being in Krishna. We want to relate to everybody, even our family, so that we're increasing their Krishna consciousness. If you have that kind of desire, if you've got that determination, then Krishna will give you the vision of how to see everyone in relation to him. That's very exciting, to see Krishna in relation, to see everyone in relation to Krishna, and to see Krishna in relation to everyone. Very exciting vision. Otherwise, simply to see others as just separate entities cut off from Krishna, it gets very troublesome and quarrelsome and dry. To see living entities separate from Krishna, because no one's separate from Krishna. But we need the practical experience of seeing everyone in relation to Krishna. And to do that, we have to agree. Other living entities are not meant for my pleasure. I must treat them in such a way that they can give more pleasure to Krishna. In other words, what we're talking about here now is something much greater than simple ecological or environmental awareness, in which you don't mistreat nature because you want to enjoy nature better. The basic problem with that so-called environmental consciousness is that people still think I'm the enjoyer. So they just realize, if I'm the enjoyer and I make the lakes dirty, that's ruining my enjoyment. Therefore, we should protect the environment. But that's not anywhere near what Krishna's talking about here. True environmental consciousness means to see everything as Krishna's property and treat it in such a way that the best service to Krishna results. So, this is not so high and lofty at all. We can all make a beginning attempt in this way to see others in relation to Krishna, whether it's our family, our fellow devotees, people we meet. We want to act toward them in such a way that they become inspired to increase their service to Krishna. And certainly we don't want to use anyone for our sense gratification. It's very important. These are ways we can start right now to get the vision that Krishna is talking about in this chapter. In other words, Krishna consciousness is not just way up in the air beyond all of us. There are practical things we can do right now. And we can help one another to see in that way. So we can read a bit of the purpose. We like to read some of
the Krishna consciousness is the basic field of the The Lord and his karma and teachers fulfill the things both the heart of the God and the spirit of the Brahmana. This again unites the Lord of the kingdom of kings and people and is not necessarily fixed by the presence of the God or Brahmana. That is the supreme neutrality of the Lord. The individual soul is also situated in the individual heart, but he is not present in all hearts. That is the distinction between the individual soul and the soul. One who is not sexually in the technical game cannot be so clearly. A Krishna conscious person can see Krishna in the heart of the believer and the non-believer. And the Krishna conscious is follows. The Lord
is a part of Master Pad, Atma, Ekra, and all believe. So, it's a very good point to focus on right now, that a Krishna conscious person can see Krishna in the heart of both the believer and the non-believer. But that doesn't mean that you associate with non-devotees because you think, oh, I see Krishna in everybody's heart. No. One has to be able to give Krishna conscious association and not take material association. When we're going out preaching and associating with others, we're not taking their materialistic influence. We're trying to give them the Krishna influence. Of course, preaching is the best way to be blessed by Krishna with this vision of seeing everyone in Krishna and Krishna everywhere. If you want to impress the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that you want your vision to change, there's no doubt. Activities of teaching others the message of Krishna consciousness, that's the best way. Krishna says at the end of the Gita, no one's more dear to me. No one's more dear to me than the one who teaches my glories to others. It's a very important point. Now, why should you want to become dear to Krishna? You want to become dear to Krishna because... why not? Krishna is all attractive. You all have a natural tendency to want to become dear to somebody. So Bhagavad Gita teaches you the process of how to become dear to the best of all persons. And when you please Krishna, then your vision will change. You'll see that. You can begin right now. You don't have to wait till you're in Mahabharata to start trying to please Krishna and thinking about pleasing Krishna. It can begin where you're at right now. And of course, without that beginning, you're going to go nowhere anyway. Because bhakti means love and devotion. So the devotion begins with thinking, how can I please Krishna? How can I become dear to Krishna? That desire in the heart is very essential. We all know what it's like to have a desire in the heart. We have love for our children, love for our spouse, love for our parents. That's indicating that there is some heartfelt emotion, some energy there in the heart. Now we simply have to find the best thing to do with that. reside in the heart. And Krishna consciousness is the process of showing you the best thing to do with that energy, that drive you got in the heart to want to be near to someone. So we don't want to deny this propensity to want to be dear to someone. Simply we want to connect it to the right, connect it in the right way. Our main problems in interactions with others come when we use others for sense gratification. We don't treat them in such a way that their service to Krishna increases. And we don't treat them in such a way that we give pleasure to Krishna. We either try to use them for our own material pleasure, or else we get angry at them that they're getting in the way of our pleasure. This is material conditioning. Everyone and everything in this world is for my pleasure. Subtly or grossly. That's our disease. So as long as we're suffering from that disease and treat others in that way, we won't be able to see Krishna in everyone and everyone in Krishna. In other words, we want our vision to change. We don't want to just think, I'm seeing things the way they are. We're not. So first we have to realize that, and then act in such a way to beg Krishna, to impress Krishna, change my vision. Because Krishna's in everyone's heart, as we're hearing in this purport. In the 15th chapter, Krishna says, Sarva Sichaham Hridi Sannivishta Matasmitya Gyanam Aponamcha. I am in everyone's heart. From me is coming their remembrance and forgetfulness and their knowledge. If you please Krishna, he'll help you forget your material desires. And if you don't want to please Krishna, he'll help you forget your Krishna consciousness. So everything depends on pleasing Krishna. That is what bhakti yoga is about. Loving devotional service to please Krishna. And then when the Lord is pleased, he'll kindly turn on the torchlight of knowledge in the heart. So this Krishna consciousness movement is an organized attempt how to please Krishna, both individually and collectively.
The Lord being a sensible being is like a mother who makes payment. As a mother, the duty to all different kinds of children is the same father or mother or also. Something of a supersoul is always made in a being. Outwardly also, a human being is situated in the energy of the Lord. As will be explained in the Siddhic chapter, a Lord has primarily two energies, the spiritual, the superior, and the inferior, or inferior. So what do we see are both part of the superior energy is conditioned by the inferior energy. Nothing into the law from the world's energy. Everybody needs to be in such a position and one way or another. The yogi sees equally because he sees that all living entities are very different situations according to the results of world of work. In all circumstances remain servants of God. While in the material energy, the living entities serve the material system. While in the spiritual energy, the servants of the material purpose. In either case, the living entity is the servant of God. The spiritual energy quality is the purpose of the spiritual energy.
So that you all know. Everybody is serving Krishna. The problem is, service that's indirect is not the same as service that's direct. If you give up bhakti yoga and go out into material existence, you're still rendering service. The point is, you've dropped your loving devotional service and you've taken up arrogant, proud material service. But you'll never get away from service. This is an important point to understand. I mean, I know we hear it all the time, but we really got to let it sink into our skulls. I will never get away from being a servant. Never. I'll always be serving somebody and something. So I might as well find the best thing to serve. Once you become convinced that you're never going to get away from being a servant, then you lose this false aversion against being a devotional servant. You're always going to serve. And it's therefore the highest privilege to be able to serve Krishna, because you'll never get away from rendering service. Of course, the way the illusory energy works, everybody is walking around thinking, I am the controller, I'm the enjoyer. Nobody will think of themselves as a servant, although they're so dedicatedly serving the material energy. This is the trick of Maya. I think this much we can see. But Krishna wants us to see more. Krishna wants us to see how everyone is meant for his pleasure. But first we have to understand everyone's already a servant. But next we should think, how can I treat everybody for Krishna's pleasure? That means you're automatically acknowledging that Krishna is the proprietor. Everyone is his property. And this takes effort. This takes concentration. And that's why it's called bhakti yoga. It's the cultivation, the practice of how to see things for Krishna's pleasure. We're so, you see, what is lust, actually? Lust means wherever I look, I see opportunities for my own sense grasp. Whenever you look, oh, that one, yeah, that would be nice. Oh, that situation. That, yes. That's the last, you can just let it ring the answers. That same vision of seeing opportunities for your own sense gratification can change into seeing opportunities for Krishna's pleasure. Oh, this would be good for Krishna. That would be good for Krishna. This would be very glorious for Krishna. So, in other words, these same things are just reversed. There's nothing wrong with being eager. Spiritual life doesn't mean to turn into a rock. Spiritual life is full of desire, it's full of hankering, full of longing. But not longing for our own lust. It's longing for Krishna's pleasure. That's why we chant Hare Krishna. We're calling out to Krishna. Krishna, I want to serve you. You know, it's not just that we've got our hands mechanically stuck in our bead bag and we're just whirling around our beads. No, the chanting of the Maha Mantra is our calling out to Krishna. Please give me service. I am your servant. I want to serve you. It's coming from the core of our existence. As Prabhupada explained, it's like a child calling for its mother. All of you who are mothers, you know what it's like when a child's really calling for you. And you can tell a difference when the child's just pretending or when the child's really calling out. You all know that difference. So, naturally, Krishna knows the difference in our chanting. When we're just going through the motions, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And when we're from our heart, appealing to Krishna, please give me devotional service. So in the next verse, Krishna again talks about vision, what you should see. Yo mam prashati sarvatra, sarvam cha mai prashati, tasya aham na pranashyami, tatra me na pranashyati. The one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. This is Krishna's promise to you. Once you start seeing in that way, yes, how can this situation be for Krishna's enjoyment? How can this person, how can I act towards this person so that Krishna will get more pleasure? When you start thinking like that and you get really solidified in that kind of mentality, Krishna promises, I'll never be lost to you and you'll never be lost to me. That's the guarantee. Through thick and thin, you'll always feel Krishna's presence with you. That's it.
Such person may appear to be also the very compassionate of the material nature, but initiating it from the focus of Krishna, knowing that everything is a manifestation of Krishna consciousness. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. So the basic principle of Krishna consciousness.
Yes. So that nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything, means I don't have anything. It's all Krishna. Once again, our main problem in this world is falsely appropriating other people and other things as belonging to us. We come in this world with nothing, we leave with nothing. But in between birth and death, we're busy claiming, this is mine, this is mine. She belongs to me, he belongs to me. So earlier, when this chapter Prabhupada explains that a devotee lives simply and keeps his possessions to the minimum so he can curb this kind of attitude of everything is mine. We want to simply see how everything in this world can be used for Krishna's pleasure. And it's a never-ending art that the devotee is developing. It is an eternal process of love, how to be better and better, be better and better at seeing ways to give more to Krishna, seeing ways to use things better in Krishna's service. There's no end to it. Therefore, we shouldn't fear that devotional life is going to become stale and dry and mechanical. There's never any end to it. A real devotee, you always look back just at what happened the previous month and you think, oh, I could have done that so much better. Why didn't I see a better way to treat that person or a better way to be more attentive and devotional? Every month after month it's like that because it's love. You can never serve Krishna without improvement. Even on the spiritual plane, although it's all spiritual, without material flaws, still things are improving. Deeper and deeper in love with Krishna. Like in Vrindavan. The residents of Vrindavan, they simply fall deeper and deeper in love with Krishna. They become more and more attracted to Krishna. Although they're already on the platform of perfection. Therefore, Srinivasacharya, in his prayers to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, says, Anandam Buri Vardhanam Patipadam Pranam Ritaspa. What's the name? Or is that Lord Chaitanya? Yeah. In any case, it's always increasing, this path of bliss. In Srinivasacharya's prayers, I said the six Goswamis, they're expanding the ocean of transcendental bliss by their loving devotion to Krishna. They're making the ocean of bhakti wider and wider. So we have to get out of our mind this conception that devotional service is something rigid, it's something mechanical, it's something dry, I have to do it. Any service is such a great opportunity to develop this love. Of course, it'll take a lot of practice, but we should remember what the goal is. We are heading for love of Krishna. So, we must practice. It's true, our hearts are encased with so much pollution. So the first manifestation of love is devotional service performed under rules and regulations. Whether I feel like it or not, I do it. And then gradually the heart becomes more and more purified and spontaneously you do various services to Krishna. But the first step is under rules and regulations. Never mind whether I feel like it or not. But if prematurely we start thinking, well, I don't feel it right now, therefore I won't do it, that's a great mistake. We should know that our feelings, at this point, for most of us, our feelings are polluted by the three modes of material nature. We can't trust our feelings. In the New Age world, the big thing of intuition, just listen to your own intuition. And you can see where everybody's intuition leads them. The sense gratification. Krishna consciousness directly points out that our feelings right now are artificial. They are not our real feelings. We need purification. That doesn't mean that in the perfect stage there's no feelings. No. In the perfect stage there are pure feelings. But we need some work to get at that stage. So bhakti is full of knowledge. Bhakti is full of emotions. In other words, bhakti is supreme love. But not sentiment. Bhakti develops through knowledge and detachment. So last Monday we were talking about the previous verse in the sixth chapter, how to be satisfied with knowledge and renunciation. And we wanted to think about that for a while. To be satisfied having jnana and vijnana, wisdom and realization, actually get a sense of satisfaction. That is possible. That's the wealth we're meant to have. Satisfaction that I know something about Krishna, I realize something about Krishna. But you can have that kind of wealth. Of course, at the same time, one's thinking, there's so much about Krishna I don't know. So this is life on the spiritual plane. You feel satisfied, yet you're always hankering for more. But these things are not theoretical. You've got to really wake up a bit, because all of us fall into the trap of just thinking this is this talk. It's nice talk, I wish I were much of a Gita. These things are real, and you can have it. It just takes work. And work means practical absorption and devotional service. The more intense the service is, the better. Because the better chance you have at developing this kind of love. The better chance you have at pleasing Krishna. You want intense devotional service. You just don't want casual, you know, dipping your toes in the water. You want to dive deep into devotional service. So these temples that Srila Prabhupada has established, they're meant for diving deep into devotional service. You know what it's like on a very hot day to dive deep into a body of water. It's sweltering outside. You just dive into the water and you feel so cool and refreshed. That's the attitude we need in serving Krishna. We want to get the result. We want our vision to change. So you all need to kind of wake each other up a bit. Read the next paragraph. This is a very wonderful paragraph here.
Krishna consciousness is the development of love of Krishna. The position changing into able to material liberation. At this stage of Krishna consciousness beyond self.
It is the stage.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, maybe.
Oh.
Okay, I got you have the edge.
Beyond self-realization, the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the same sense that Krishna becomes intimate with the devotee and the devotee becomes fully one with Krishna. An intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists. In that stage, the living entity can live the annihilation. Lord's personality is brought in ever out of the sight of the devotee. The merge from Krishna is spiritual annihilation. The devotee takes no such risk on this occasion.
Prem Anjana Sri Chupakti Bhavati Santasya Daiva Hideyeshu Bhavati Yam Shama Sundra Machinta Guna Sarupam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Jami.
The worship of the Prime of the Lord Govinda was always being seen by the devotee of his eyes and with the top of love. He seems in his eternal form of Sama Sundra in the Sundra Dara. Situated within the heart of the devotee. At this stage, Lord Krishna never disappears from the sight of the devotee, nor does the devotee ever lose sight of the Lord. In the case of the yogi, he sees the Lord as karma or from the heart of the same karma. If the yogi sees him as a fierce waiting, he is scared to live for a moment of heart.
So yes, there are yogis who aspire to see the super soul in the heart. But bhakti yoga is giving you a chance to see more than that. It's giving you a chance to see Krishna in everyone and in everything. But let us remember what's getting in the way. Our desire for sense gratification, which causes us to treat people and things for our own purposes, our own pleasure, and then we forget Krishna. Forgetting Krishna means forgetting that everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. So the purpose of a devotional atmosphere and devotional setting is that we will remember everything and everyone is for Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, I'm realizing more and more, for householders to live in a devotional setting around deities, Srila Prabhupada's and so on, it's a very rare opportunity. There are so many householders, some connection to Krishna consciousness, who are struggling so hard, scattered here and there. And it's very, very difficult. Very difficult for them to remember Krishna. Yes, they may have neck beads on, they may say Hari Bol, and they have good intentions and good sentiments, but literally you can get run over by the material energy. So those householders who are fortunate enough to live in a very pastorated devotional setting should always remember this great advantage. Opportunity to live in a place where you're always reminded every moment, I should be thinking, everything is for Krishna's pleasure. Everything should be used for Krishna's pleasure. That's the real advantage of living here. You know the example Prabhupada always gave. If you're a businessman, you want to be situated where, at a business action central. Like if you're a stock broker, you want to be at a stock market. So similarly, if you're interested in devotion, you want to be at a place where there's lots of devotional activities going on. Common sense. If you want to see, as Krishna says you should see in the sixth chapter, then you want to be situated in such a way that you can, that your vision will change. If you've got eye problems, you want to be near an eye doctor. So, we all have vision problems. We all have eye problems. We're not seeing the way we should be seeing. And because of pride and arrogance, we're still proud anyway, even though we've got cataracts in our eyes. We're so proud. Quietly or loudly, we're very proud. No one can tell us anything. But that can change by a desire to absorb oneself deeply in devotional service. Because in order to dive deeply into devotional service, you're going to have to leave your pride behind and just humble yourself before the opportunity to serve Krishna. You cannot serve Krishna continuously when there's pride. To actually be continuously absorbed in devotional service. You become ready to do anything to give Krishna pleasure. You don't consider any impediment. Just like when Krishna plays his flute, the gopis drop everything. They forget all about other considerations and they're simply focused on Krishna's calling. We are meant to give Krishna pleasure. That's why Lord Chaitanya says there's no higher devotees of Krishna than the cowherd girls of Vrindavan. course, for Westerners, I found it's hard to understand the great sacrifice of the Gopis. So what if they left their families and ignored social customs and raced off into the forest? Big deal, because Western culture is just totally unchaste. But those, from Indian backgrounds, they know that from the material point of view, of course, the Gopis are purely spiritual. But from a material point of view, for young girls to race out in the middle of the night out of their homes is just inconceivable. It's just so in that way, they're demonstrating to us how to serve Krishna. Even in our stage of practice, we don't have the pure feeling yet welling up inside us. So we need to do things just because we have to. But that's also love. It's the beginning of love. That even though I don't have the feelings now, never mind. Still I'll go on. Under rules and injunctions. So we're just trying to give some little idea of how exciting bhakti is. Any questions? Comments?
Do
you trust yourself? When you start taking the medicine and you see the medicine work, you'll develop trust. But as long as you're not taking the medicine, you won't trust. You have no experience. The medicine works. So after many years of avoiding the medicine, actually the trust will be very low.
I started out with my connection about utility.
Mm-hmm.
I trust before we actually have to do utility.
I don't remember that, but I didn't trust you. What you're asking me, when I use the word integrity, I mean... You stick to your word, and you, in every circumstance, you try to do what's best for Krishna's pleasure, even though maybe it was difficult for yourself. That's integrity. But if you don't take the medicine, then naturally you won't want to trust. But once you start taking the medicine, you see it works, you're trusting. You trust Krishna by taking the medicine. It's like we're reading Bhagavad Gita to develop our trust of Krishna. We just don't want to be sentimental religionists. Yes, I believe in Bhagavad Gita. We want to actually examine Bhagavad Gita and trust Krishna. That's why we're reading this. We're all developing our trust of Krishna. I know no one will ever say, I don't trust Krishna. But in our classes, we're actually finding out what it means to trust Krishna. It's not a sentimental thing. I'm just all inspiring others. But I remember one morning, I think it was a Saturday morning, before Bhagavatam class, a Baba came up to me and was quoting one verse from Bhagavad Gita. Such enthusiasm. And I was all, that really sounds great. It's contagious, Trust of Krishna is contagious. Isn't that what the Bhagavatam says? The Tam Prasangam Amavirya sums it up. The talks about me are even more relishable in association devotees. I have a certain rasa, a certain taste. So basically what classes are, they're chances to increase our trust of Krishna beyond just lip service. I believe in Bhagavad Gita. My religion is Bhagavad Gita. What's your religion? I believe this. Well, you believe that. That's not Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not belief. It is actual immersion in reality, the ultimate reality. And to do that, we've got to trust Krishna. Therefore, with whatever intelligence we have, we're considering the words of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, how to see? What is real vision? So together we want to consider that. And together we think, yes, I should stop seeing others as tools for my own sense gratification. I should see them as servants of Krishna. Just the development of that desire will allow the super soul to start giving us instruction. Without desire, it's very difficult to be taught anything. Any teacher knows that. The kids don't desire to learn. It's a real struggle to get them to learn, because first you've got to fan the flame of desire. Career. We should see room for expansion and development. Just like when you, in the material sense, you join a corporation at the bottom of the corporate ladder, and you know the administrators, the executives are always trying to inspire you. I can probably use multi-level marketing. Huh? You can go to the higher level. How does it work? It works like that, doesn't it? I remember. How does it, you explain how you're always motivating the people?
Yeah.
What do you do? Yeah. You always lay out the opportunity for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
You explain them. If you, what is it? You sign up 10 people, you'll get a slice out of their earnings. And if they sign up 10 people themselves, you'll get a slice of the first 10 and the second 10 too. It goes on and on and on. And they get really greedy, right? You're doing that too, they get greedy. And you can see how actually in the spiritual sense the greed should be there. The people start capping. Yes. I'll have a whole system of people I'm making money off of. The other people will think they're making money, and I'll be making money off them thinking they're making money. Wow, this is great. Well, Krishna consciousness is really like that. The more you try to understand what Krishna is saying here, act on that, and then you start explaining it to others, the more you please Krishna. And the more the people who you explain it to others, the more things increase. So we all want to encourage one another, just like you're encouraging the people in your business. Just sign up. Go higher. Get more people. Sign up more people. You sign up, then you get others to sign up. You're always you can go so high. When you sign up 100 people, then you're a what, district supervisor or something? Is that the right word? You can do it. And then you always point out examples to them, right, of so-and-so is just an ordinary housewife living in Monterey, and she signed up 100 people, and now she's the richest, happiest lady in the country. Isn't that what you said? Just from her own phone, just by putting in a few hours a day, she did it. You can do it too. I can plug in and do something. Of course, you're hoping that with your business you can serve Krishna. That is something else. But generally when people are doing that, unless they're devotees, using it for Krishna's pleasure, it's just a web of illusion. But in bhakti, it's for real. Things will increase on the spiritual plane. You will get these things Krishna's talking about if you try. Just like in multi-level marketing, I know sometimes people just sign up and they never really get into it, right? Of course, even the fact that they sign up, you beneficial also. No? Don't you get a little
No.
They have to do something, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, so you got to preach to them, huh?
Yeah.
Got to fire them up.
Can I take them?
I thought in some multi-level marketing systems, they pay a fee.
Yeah.
Not in yours. Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. So therefore, I know in the States, some of them you pay a fee to sign up, and therefore, even if they don't do anything, you still get a little action.
Yeah.
So, you have to convince them to increase. And fight that in Krishna consciousness. You're telling the people, yes, you'll attain this, you'll attain that. Krishna's doing the same thing with you there. He's telling you, you'll see like this, you'll see all beings in me, you'll see me in everyone. You'll never be lost to me. I'll never be lost to you. He's inspiring you. Come on, go for it. Because there's a thick cloud of illusion that always tells you, this is far beyond you. You see, especially if you're a devotee, Maya won't try the trick on you of telling you it's all false. Instead, the illusory energy works in a different way. It's true, but it's beyond you. It's all true, Bhagavad Gita. Believe me, I'm your friend Maya. It's all true. Yes, what Krishna's saying is true, but it's so far beyond you. It's so high. I mean, you can't be expected. Little old you, come on, be serious. You become a yogi, you become a sadhu. Just gently fall back into Maya. Not abruptly, but just gradually fall back. There'll be full understanding and full compassion over it. Don't do it abruptly now. I know you're devotees, and the last thing I want you to do is just fall into Maya immediately.
But gradually.
That's allowable enough. Any decent human being can accept that, that you gradually fall into the mind. Gradually decrease the enthusiasm. You do it gracefully in a holistic way. Balancing each other while you're falling into Maya. More and more start to think of relationships amongst yourselves. And Krishna, that'll come in another life. You'll take your shower in the morning. Always be a vegetarian. But meanwhile, go on and enjoy the fruits of your life. Go on working for your own pleasure. Natural and normal. What do you think you are, sannyasi? These voices plague everybody. So you have to, that's why we're having these classes, so you don't listen to these voices. You listen to Krishna. Because the job of the material energy is to present itself as more attractive than Krishna.
You mentioned that Maya was such as the body. And the body can be in Maya, even if it's becoming emotional.
There's different levels of absorption. Generally, just understand that if you're doing something for Krishna's pleasure, and you're following Prabhupada's basic devotional guidelines, then you're all right. There's always a question of more and more love, you know. If you're following the regular principles, you're chanting the 16 rounds, and you're engaged in serving Krishna, then you are right. Now, of course, that can be better and better and better. But at least do that. Remember that as soon as we try to enjoy, and as soon as we want the fruits, the results, that's why Prabhupada coined that term, fruit of activity. As soon as you want the fruits, there's trouble. That's the non-devotee. I want the fruits. I should get the fruits. As we become more and more purified in devotional service, we want more and more to give everything to Krishna. That's something that we have to work on. That's why we have management and counseling to help devotees how to give everything to Krishna. In different ashrams, that's approached in different ways, but the goal is the same, to end up giving everything to Krishna. Sober head about it, a cool head. Especially if you have a family, it takes careful consideration. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, but it just takes careful consideration and planning and timing. And so that's all part of the art of trying to please Krishna. If you don't have a family, it's a bit easier. But still, if you have a family, it can be done. Krishna declines emphatic like that. Anyone! Krishna says, Mom and Pastor Gopati, Jay Krishna Pastor, anyone can go back to God. You're doing that too, kind of like? Is it a Krishna conscious business? I mean, it's for Krishna's pleasure? You try to give it to Krishna's pleasure. So you all are very fortunate. So let's increase our great fortune. So much to do. Don't be afraid to take a chance on the service, you know? Krishna says in the Gita, there's no loss or diminution on this path. When Arjuna was fighting the battle, there was no guarantee he was going to win. Krishna told him, victory or defeat, not your concern. But just be happy, in other words, that you have a chance to serve me. This is very contradictory to our training. We're trained to always calculate. If there's something in it for me, then I'll be enthusiastic. What's the Bengali saying Prabhupada would always quote? When there's profit for me, the sand turns into gold. No profit for me, the sand remains sand. That's a material attitude. Prabhupada said that in reference to why communism wouldn't work, because there's no profit available. Everyone just has to imagine it's all for the state, and I'm part of the state, so I'll be happy. It doesn't work out that way. But devotional service, I'm so happy to have a chance to serve Krishna. So just like multi-level marketing, you can all go out and inspire other people to increase their service. Then you'll see Krishna work wonders. We just got to kind of shake ourselves awake a bit. We've forgotten something. Oh, Lord,